So, Giles, you're coming to Glasgow in June for Big Spud. Very exciting. You're definitely going to be the person that's coming the furthest from New Zealand to Glasgow. So, thank you for that. What are you going to be talking about?
Just unless you're coming from an Antarctica, I will be coming further than anyone else. So I'm very mindful, as president of the International Society for the Study of Personality Disorders, how understanding the label personality disorder and how we go about diagnosis is sort of being looked at differently in different parts of the world. In a particularly interesting part of the world where it's being looked at in a provocative way is the UK. I had the pleasure of training with Oliver Dale, who's the president of Big Spud. And I guess in our discussions, he thought this might be something that would be of interest to a UK audience, to hear about how personality disorder as a label and a grouping is thought about outside of the UK, and maybe to have a bit of a think about the pros and cons of the label. And so I've kind of entitled my talk, "Is the Label Too Taxing?" Because fundamentally, this will be a talk about taxonomy. And taxonomy is the study of classification. So it comes from two Greek words, taxis, which means to arrange, and nomos, which is the law. So it's the law of how we arrange stuff is taxonomy. And we're very interested in that in medicine generally. And the reason for that is we group things together in order to study them. And that's sort of where the science bits of medicine comes from.
How have we ended up then with this term personality disorder? Where did it come from?
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting question. People have been interested in personality forever. So if you go back to Hippocrates, that's an interesting slip of the tongue. Hippocrates, back in Greek times, he felt that the humours, the bits of your personality, fundamentally led to illness, and all illness was based on personality. And that idea was expanded by Galen, who's probably the greatest ancient physician, and has been held as a part of the Western tradition of medicine for a long time. In more modern times, concepts of personality have initially been kind of reborn and thought through by psychologists, essentially working with normal populations, so interested in understanding personality normally. And as psychiatry sort of developed itself into a profession, psychiatrists became interested in concepts of personality in the way of people having their best lives. And unsurprisingly, doctors label things disorders or diseases, and so the diagnosis of personality disorder became labeled in that way, if you like. It's a term that's been around since the 1920s or 30s, depending on who you believe. And the term borderline personality disorder has been around from the 50s or 60s. And that term came to prominence with a very famous American analyst who's a doctor called Otto Kernberg, who really brought this concept of a borderline personality organization, is what he called it, to light.
And you spoke at the beginning about the kind of difference around the world. Is personality disorder something that's kind of accepted and used internationally?
Yeah, absolutely. And in this case, and one of the reasons, hopefully, I can be a bit provocative in a sensitive way, is just to help people in the UK to hear about how it's used elsewhere. So, in fact, in ISSPD, for example, part of our mission is to promote an understanding of personality disorder, particularly in the US, where personality disorder is relatively underrepresented or ignored within lots of psychology and psychiatry programs. And so we have almost the complete reverse of what we see in the UK, where we're trying to promote the term. And the reason for that is to help develop an understanding of its rationale, its history, how to make the diagnosis, and what the value of that diagnosis might be. Where I come from, down in Australasia, there's some very prominent work that is done looking at personality disorder in terms of treatment and the sorts of treatments which public mental health systems can deliver. That work requires a label, in this case, personality disorder, to make it happen. In other places of the world, like Europe, for example, There's some really excellent work being done in Germany by Martin Bohos, who looks at personality disorder and trauma, and by others, for example, Professor Herpitz and Professor Kaz, looking at things like what goes on in your brain if you happen to carry this diagnostic label. So in other parts of the world, the label is either being promoted or is accepted and is used for both treatment and doing more science. But certainly that doesn't seem to be the case in the UK from what I hear from the college. I'm a member of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, my colleagues in the UK, where I trained, and obviously conversations with people like Ollie. There is a strong anti-psychiatry movement, and part of that movement is about anti-diagnosis, for want of a better way of putting it. What's really clear, and I'm really interested in taxonomy, is that the way we understand and do diagnosis in psychiatry clinically, day to day, and this is part of my day job, half the time I'm a jobbing psychiatrist, isn't great. You know, there was a very famous comment by a chap called Akasal who said, in psychiatry, we don't carve nature at the joints, and that is right. To make a really good diagnosis, what we want is a clear division between one group or category of problems and another that's classifying according to a law. And we are not good at doing that. We're getting better. And so there are some classification systems that recognize this complexity and build that in. Those are still a little while away from being applied clinically. And so the anti-diagnosis movement have a point. And they're not without valid concerns. So borderline personality disorder, which is the kind of commonest personality disorder we see in public secondary mental health services outside of forensics, has something like 156 different ways of making the diagnosis. So immediately you could argue, well, how can that be a thing that you're classifying together? You know, and that's a fair comment. If we look at something like mild alcohol use disorder, you get more like 1,028 different combinations of symptoms we can have to make the diagnosis. So obviously there are problems in terms of the way we categorize things. And if you look at the prevalence of diagnosis, so how much of a diagnosis exists in society, for example, for some psychiatric classifications, you see really broad differences, like more than 15 or 16 fold across the world, which suggests that groups of psychiatrists or diagnosticians are doing different things at different places. And so I think the anti-diagnosis concept or movement, you know, I don't think that's without valid concerns. I guess the balance, the other side of that is, what does the diagnosis offer? How does the diagnosis help us in terms of science? How does the diagnosis help us in terms of treatment and understanding? And I guess that's the kind of the balance I want to be thinking through, hopefully in a conversation at Big Spud, both in my talk and with the people who are there. So that's the kind of interesting thing for me. What do we gain if we lose the diagnosis? What do we lose if we lose the diagnosis?
Is the term hated as much anywhere else in the world as it is in the UK?
I guess there are two studies that make really clear that personality disorder are the patients, psychiatrists and clinicians don't like, one of which I did, and one of which was done back in 1986, a long time before me. There is qualitative research that suggests the term personality disorder means clinicians think patients are more difficult, more challenging, harder to work with. And so I wouldn't describe a personality disorder as a disorder that people don't like to have on their caseloads or be working with. Rather, it offers particular challenges. And so you need to understand and be trained to think about how to help people with those challenges. And you need to understand some of the basic what's going on and some of the science to be able to practically be useful. Certainly back in the dark ages when I trained and was in the UK, I saw people in significant psychosocial distress with very serious problems seeking help, who received the label of personality disorder and were summarily discharged. And I think probably one of the reasons my career has taken the direction it has is because that felt wrong to me. Surely our job as mental health professionals is to think about how to help people with their psychosocial stress. And as I say to my patients routinely, you know, there are two experts in this room, and I'm the expert almost certainly when it comes to science and the treatment of mental health problems, and you're the expert on you. And, you know, in 6 months, in a year time, only one of us gets to decide if this has been useful, and that's not me. You know, and so kind of understanding that balance, what we bring and how we understand that's super important. And that foundationally has something to do with diagnosis and how we go about understanding.
So how do you see that developing? Let's say 20 years time, how do you think psychiatric diagnosis is, what's it going to be looking like?
I think that's a really interesting question. So what I hope we have is a dimensional system for people who kind of like technically stuff, go look up HITOP. It's all in capitals except for the I, HITOP. It's a group of very, very clever, both clinicians, but mostly academics, mostly based in the US, looking at building a structure to understand personality and psychopathology, so that the symptoms in the mind, in a way that actually is valid, consistent, reliable. And that model looks really good to me. My hope in 20 years' time is we have a useful diagnostic categorization that will look something like that. And we see it heading in that direction in some ways at the moment. So if we look at the AMPD, which is the alternative model of personality disorder in DSM-5, if you look at the new way personality disorder is diagnosed in ICD-11, both of those use a dimensional framework. So rather than saying we have a category, they say, well, there is a dimension here, and when it becomes problematic, then it becomes something to look at. And that kind of makes sense. You know, if your personality works for you, why would you come see me? And so that's much closer to what real science is like, I think. And I think will enable us to be much more targeted in our interventions. So the natural follow-on from having a dimensional model of personality and psychopathology will be what I think will be kind of like unit blocks of treatment. So rather than saying we have, you know, this three-letter acronym treatment for this three-letter acronym personality disorder or something like that, what we'll say is that we have this mode of treatment, this box of interventions that might be medicine or might be therapy that helps people with things like interpersonal distress, you know, or dysexecutive cognitive problems. And those problems may line up in a myriad of ways that we understand under different groupings. So it might be a bit more complicated, but hopefully it will be a lot more effective.
If people are coming along to hear you talk at the conference, what one paper would you suggest they read before they do?
So there isn't one paper that immediately springs to mind. And the reason for that is that there is a really broad array of understanding of what makes up a psychiatric diagnosis and the diagnosis of personality disorder, and commentary about the most talked about personality disorder, which is borderline personality disorder. For those who like the technically taxonomy bits, there's a great paper by Markov, published in 2001 in the Annual Review of Psychology, which gives you a really detailed description of HITOP. And I think that's probably as close as we are to what is real when it comes to personality disorder. If you're interested in a more theory of mind and analytic view, go back to Otto Kernberg's paper, I think published in 1964, or could be 1969. That's called The Borderline Personality Organization. So that is a long analytic paper exploring the concept of having a personality that sits on the border of neurosis and psychosis. And if you want to see how having a label helps make science change, read them both and compare and contrast.
Thank you. It sounds like you need to do the talk and then write a paper that will bring this together in some way.
Yeah, I think that might be interesting. So a group of us in ISSPD actually published a paper called ISSPD Past, Present and Future, And that's in the Journal of Personality Disorders. I think it reached print last year. And although what that does is chronologies our international organizations' kind of growth and development, I mean, obviously that is extremely closely intertwined with some of the core issues in relation to personality over time. And so that would give you, I guess, a kind of a feel about how this is looked at internationally, at least from our organization's perspective.
So you're talking at 9 o'clock on the Wednesday morning of the conference, after the conference dinner on the Tuesday night. Presumably you won't be jet lagged at 9 o'clock on a Wednesday morning in Glasgow.
No, and I'll have to behave at the conference dinner, clearly.
Exactly. Well, we're really looking forward to it, Giles. Thanks so much for sharing with us. And I hope it goes well.
Thank you very much, Andre. I really appreciate the time.